Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, mother! Do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination. Hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
North Bay, Stats and Jacks. Tom Holly, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures up 6.25. They were down 20 last night. NASDAQ Futures over down 85. They were just down 100, but we just snapped up there for a little bit. Except for a huge move down yesterday. Dow down 800, and everybody else is down well over percent. Well, we'll give you the exact numbers while we're going to do that. The S&Ps was down 125. That's 3.5%. NASDAQ was down a full 5%. 598. Now, that's a lot. Kevin, how are you?
Oh, I'm reasonably gruntled this morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. So, did you have your puts, your short spoo?
Yeah, I had it all. I'm filthy rich, and, you know, I don't need this gig anymore.
Yeah, well, you know, these million-dollar gigs, sometimes you don't need them. You got so much. Just saying, you know. Interesting day yesterday. There was no, well, actually, it was a little bounce back in the close. We came back 100 points in NASDAQ futures. We were down like 700 at one point, and but it was a was a day that there was no prisoners really, and I don't know if there was much liquidity in a lot of the markets either. A lot of the markets got somewhat wide. One of these days, maybe we'll get a government that addresses the three market maker system. When we used to have like a couple thousand, and now you can't even be one. It's some days it's one of those things, Kevin, that the. I really wonder what happened in the early 70s when somehow or another, I mean, pretty much the only time that I can even imagine, except for maybe when Teddy Roosevelt was president, we had a huge bounce back into being more competitive instead of less. Because every other time in history, it sure seems like it's relentlessly the other way, and it's been relentlessly the other way since. I mean, the CBOE was designed to not be a specialist system like the New York Stock Exchange, and the NASDAQ system was designed where anybody could be a market maker. And all this happened in the early 70s, about the same time that airlines were deregulated and trucking was deregulated and all those kinds of good things, and railroads pretty much were deregulated, because they had good competition from trucking after a lot of years. And somehow or another there was an academia/government partnership that got all that done, despite the whining of the big companies. And since then, it has relentlessly come back together to where there's, you know, three or four market makers in all the options world, and, you know, it's unbelievable that the firms are back in control like they were back then, and nobody seems to care. And it was, but I mean, the interesting part is not what now is unusual, it's what happened back then. I mean, I almost feel like, you know, If I could, you know, stop time for a couple of months, just going back and read all those papers and newspapers and find out how all of a sudden those guys got that kind of power to break that stuff up, and because it sure needs to be done again in a lot of areas, and I don't see either party right now being able to, you know, pass a law against spitting on the sidewalk, for God's sake. But I don't see how
they won't get together on any laws. Right now, I think they won't get together on anything until after the election. It would take some kind. I can't imagine the catastrophe that's ever going to put either side on the same page pre-election. And you've been talking about such a handful of stocks have been pushing the market up. Well, that same handful is dragged it down yesterday.
Well, that's the risk you take, and anybody who. Like I said last week, I put a lot of money to work for people, 2 weeks ago, and I ended up buying, I don't know, in one day. I guess it's a lot for one day. I bought like $300,000 worth of the QQQs for a few clients. And we did all three at once. And, you know, so in essence, I bought $145,000 worth of the big five or the big six. Even though, you know, I thought they were too high because the clients went in. You know, I had them real tight with puts, and so I don't think we lost much of it all yesterday. We probably lost a little bit, but the I don't even, but I have no desire to buy Apple at this price, yet I did, right? I mean so when yesterday, if anybody decides they want out on their indices, especially the QQQ, without even knowing it, you're selling those stocks because they're so concentrated in there. So it becomes a run just either way. You're right. I mean, it's unusual that that's the way that is, but any type of trading where you're just passive investing, where you just move stuff out, I mean, it's not really what people think they're doing. I mean, they may hate Google and Apple and buy the QQQ or even buy the SPY for that matter, but although it's less than there, but they're buying those stocks because they've become such a bigger piece of the. And that's the problem with a cap-weighted index. I mean, a price-weighted index like the Dow has all its own foibles. And in general, I prefer the cap-weighted, but it's not like they're, I mean, people don't even know what they're buying half this stuff. You know, and it's, you know what you're buying, I guess. But then again, I mean, those are the things that are moving. And right now, I mean, we have momentum trade. And there's a dramatic, I mean, one of the firms that I do some subcontracting with for the PPI, Protected Index Program, PIP. I'm thinking PPI because it's coming out next week, and I'm wondering if it's going to be a surprise number. A lot of the people are retired, older. God, Kevin, talk about having to talk them off the ledge. I mean, if they're not in, the stock that was up 5 hours yesterday, they're apoplectic. They don't care what they do. they don't care if they make nitroglycerin, for God's sake. It's scary. I mean, why aren't your market's up 22? Why am I only up like 20? I mean, because you don't want to be all in Tesla. Well, hey, Tesla. Well, duh. I mean, it is really, but there's no other place to put your dough. We've listened to Dan Janitas, who's probably as bright a guy on the buying scene as I've ever seen, and stays out of the big crazy ones and zeroes in on the small ones where he can talk to the company and those kinds of things. And he said he's buying stuff, and all of a sudden he's selling the stuff out he just bought. Because it's at a price where, you know, he can't possibly justify it. So, I mean, it's one thing for the Fed to add liquidity. You know, it's quite another to talk about propping prices to a place where the normal customers won't buy it there. I mean, I don't know what that game is. And if you got insurance companies that have to make, because they're promising people 3% returns and stuff, which isn't all that much over time when you're an insurance company, you know, those guys need to return, you know, 3.5, 4, 5 to be in the plus column, and some of these muni bonds are down to 2, and then the treasury's down to 2. Well, you've driven out all your natural buyers. I mean, what is the purpose of that? I mean, it's hard for people that aren't in the business to see the bifurcated part here. It's one thing if it's 2008, and you have the money market, people make them run on their money markets, okay? I'm skipping around here, but... And all of a sudden, you have things in the money market that you're never supposed to get to, statistically. Even though the money market tells you that stuff is going to be readily available, the fact is, most people don't show up at the bank on the same day and take cash out. So the bank has got $1 billion in deposits. They probably, well, you know more about this than me, Kevin. What do you figure? 2 million in one day is probably plenty in case people show up and want cash. Probably want cash. And even that probably rarely happens. But all of a sudden people show up, you know, and want half the billion. I mean, that's when you make the call to the Federal Reserve and you end up covering it. But same with the money market. Not everything you can get in the same day. It's not all a T-bill. So when they went down the chain, the Fed came in and said, okay, we'll prop these up, we'll make these liquid so you can go ahead and sell these. And, I mean, that to me is a banker of last resort. That's what you're supposed to do. It's quite another to say, well, now that we're buying these muni bonds, we think we're going to make them 2% instead of 4. Well, now there's no liquidity problem there. You're the only buyer. And I don't know where they got off the reservation to do that, but they clearly are there. And with the pricing, there's reasons why people don't want to invest in 30-year bond at 2%, right? Duh. Somewhere along the line, where's that thing going to be trading? Obviously, I think somewhere in the next 30 years, interest rates will be more than 2%, don't you? I mean, we won't be around for all 30, but it's a crazy world. By the way, not to shift subjects, I was talking to Maddie in a way, and we were talking about that last night.
That's okay. I was going to do it to you if you didn't do it to me.
What do you think? What do you think this report out of Penn State is going to do to football?
It's not. They've already backed off of it.
All right. I thought it was.
It didn't take but an hour for them to do that and to start issuing qualifiers. And for those who don't know what it is, I don't remember if he's a PhD or who the guy speaking from Penn State was, but they said something like, 35% of the Big Ten football players who had tested positive for COVID-19 were showing some kind of heart damage or I don't even remember what it was.
It was kind of a residual heart inflammation.
Mild
residual heart inflammation. That sounds like a good name for a rock band.
It does. Myocarditis.
Yeah.
They call it myocarditis.
But they backed off of that. Now, my first reaction to that was that has not shown up anywhere else in anybody's data, and it's not like they aren't looking at it. So the number is so far off the charts that it's either a load of crap or there is some other cause explanation for it. This is just how statistics work. This isn't, it isn't this specific situation. Anytime you get something that is such an anomaly, it means something caused it. So, then you start hypothesis testing on that. If it were true, and I were to start hypothesis testing, my first hypothesis would be, gee, how does this thing react with performance-enhancing drugs? That would be where, the first question I'd ask, but it's just a hypothesis. It doesn't, the answer may be it doesn't. It's something else. It's something, it's those little rubber pellets in artificial turf. It's something. If it were true, there would be a cause for that because it has not shown up that way anywhere else in the population.
I wonder if you were to just take a normal, there's no such thing as a normal cold. They're all different, I guess. But if you were to introduce a cold or a flu bug to people that are like in the Tour de France that are absolutely pushing the hell out of their body, I wonder if you wouldn't get some sort of a reaction that normal people wouldn't get just because you're operating at a different level. Now you have a disease.
Possibly, but I would think if anything it was that your cardiovascular system would be more inclined to fight it off because you're in such good shape.
Maybe. We don't obviously don't know. Speaking of, if you are the current state of PEDs, performance enhancing drugs, I haven't heard about them too much in a while. I do listen to A-Rod like once in a while, and I wonder why the hell the guy's on TV. But I bet that he ends up somehow. Is he going to go into the Hall of Fame in the broadcaster's wing or what?
He's going to have to get a lot better.
That's how we'll do it.
Yeah.
That's how we'll get. Move over, Mark McGuire, and start broadcasting.
Yeah.
Emmy Sosa.
But I guess.
Let's hear what Sam has to say.
But if you were going to. Well, first of all, why are the guys at Penn State even practicing? They're not. There's no season.
They probably are in their off-season workout regimen, which allows them to have a limited amount of contact with coaches and to do a lot of working out.
Yeah, but they're in the middle of the season, September.
It's not their season.
Well, I'm saying, I got my question, what I'm trying to do in a stumbling way here is, how does that work? Are those guys not going to practice? Are they working out? Are they planning on playing in the spring? Are they doing their weightlifting thing? I have no idea.
Well, the way I understand NCAA rules is if you're not in season, there is a certain amount that you can do. But there's a whole weight, you know, strength and conditioning regimen that they have for the off season.
But they're in season; they're not playing.
Same thing the players are doing in February, I would guess, is what they're doing now.
Well, but I guess to be simple about it, they are in season; they're just not playing.
No, they're not in season because they're not playing.
Okay. Well, I mean, you know, so if they don't,
and it also depends. You know, what they can and can't do depends on whether school is in session or not. And in some of the trimester schools, it's not in session yet.
I don't know how there would even be rules to cover it, to be honest with you.
No, it would just be your off-season rules.
Well, I asked the question.
What does the middle of February look like for a football team? Well, that's what they're doing. That's what the Big Ten and Pac-12 schools should be doing now.
I'm going to go on a limb and say they're not going to play in the spring. And if you just canceled the year, why can't these guys practice? I guess my question.
Because it's the NCAA. You're looking for rationality.
All right. So you're saying these guys are on scholarship, they're paying for their tuition. If they're not going to play for the whole year, they can't practice.
I'm not saying I know for sure, but if I were to guess, that they would be applying the rules as they exist.
That's wild. You can't imagine.
Or they would be. Let me put it this way: they would be skirting the rules as they exist.
Well, there's no. There can't be any rules written for a canceled season because there's never been one. I don't think.
Yeah. So what do? You fall back to the rules you have for.
I think you fall back to do whatever you want, like they always.
They are, after all, Tom. They're student athletes, and we do have to respect their ability to take classes and learn.
Yeah. Well, look at some of those guys. Where they all take like 9 hours in the fall. They must be, you know, making sure to get A's.
Yeah, a lot of people are going to be graduating this time through, huh?
Yeah.
I was reading most Big Ten coaches, obviously they're the ones that aren't playing, or at least they might be on the one-yard line. They might not be playing at all. They might be playing in the spring. I don't know. But they're not practicing right now. Most Big Ten coaches have suspended practice until further notice. So they might still be doing, you know, weight room stuff and stuff like that.
Yeah, strength and conditioning never stops for them.
Are coaches still getting paid?
Yeah, although a lot of places have done across-the-board cuts to salaries in the athletics departments.
Yeah. Assistants and head coaches taking pay cuts in football and basketball, the high-paid guys. And
really?
Gals.
Yeah. Where's Lou when you need him? How do you do that in a contract? I wonder if a contract even addresses a work stoppage. Well, why would it?
Good question. Don't know.
When you're
making a ton of money, it would be really, really bad PR to not take one along with the rest of the team.
So
you can always voluntarily take a pay cut.
Are the guys,
you know, look, if you're going to cut me 20% and now I'm only making $4 million instead of five, hey, it's somebody else's $1 million. It's real easy for me to laugh at it, but by the same token, you know, people who preach team all the time would look awfully bad if they didn't participate.
I wonder where's Jordan when, you know. I wonder what the status of like all the Under Armour and Nike contracts are.
Well, now you're shifting to where I was going to go. I was going to say what a great interview yesterday.
Well, thank you. I didn't.
Although for about 7.5 minutes, you didn't have to do anything except. Let him go.
Well, to be perfect.
You don't think that was doing something for Chief?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
Being quiet?
Restraint.
Yeah, being quiet.
I was imagining the head about to explode, but.
It was about to for.
That's much harder for you just to be quiet.
Oh, God, yeah. But it was much harder for me, but not for the reason you think. The reason was, and I guess I'll say this, is that AV was doing the most communication back and forth. Was saying that, you know, remember the basically the dad's in the concentration camp, so don't do your usual. Start asking the questions that really everybody wants to hear answered, because, you know, you'll have like overboard. And so I was sitting there wondering how far I could even drive the guy. And all of a sudden he just went off, and I didn't have to say a word. All the stuff he talked about was the stuff I wasn't supposed to ask him. which is a little weird.
Well, again, I hope that doesn't have any repercussions.
No, I hope so too.
That would be terrible if it were that to happen. Just a couple of things, a little history on this. There was a report. A lot of the stuff about forced labor got revealed in the spring, and it was a report that came out of Australia. And what, you know, among the things that were part of it is that there's a number of well-known brands, people like Gap, Adidas, H&M, Calvin Klein, and that's a parable, Nike as well, and Victoria's Secret, but also
who are you guys that have the real racy
camera? Who do I have on here? Asus, Apple, yeah. Samsung, Huawei, BMW, Volkswagen, you know, Ralph Lauren, Puma, Victoria's Secret. No, not Victoria's Secret too. But these, you know, these have all been beneficiaries of the product, the work product from the forced labor camps. That was in May. Many of them are still commenting that they're looking into their supply chains and trying to figure out what's going on.
And wondering why.
Go ahead.
And wondering why, if they're not in, they're not in, because it must be cheaper.
Yeah. Nike did issue a statement in March, basically said it's committed to its ethical and responsible manufacturing, and we uphold international labor standards, they went on to say. And they said that they were evaluating and trying to determine what's going on and want to dissociate themselves from any of these situations. It's always going to be my contention that none of these major corporations could, let me put it this way, every one of these major corporations had to know. They had to know something. They had to know something wasn't right. And that's because you don't have major suppliers anywhere that you never visit, and major suppliers' operations that you don't put on the hard hat and walk around the and do the factory tour. It just doesn't happen. You don't go sign a contract with somebody to be your primary supplier of apparel products and not kick the tires. You just talk. What do? Talk to them over the phone. Say, "Good deal. Send me the contract. We sign it and we go." That's nonsense. And what you have is that China is the biggest supplier of cotton products in the world, and 84% of its cotton comes from Xinjiang, which is the Uyghurs' territory.
Or here, we export.
Pardon?
We export a boatload of cotton to China for them to turn around, make stuff, and send it back.
Yeah, but 84%, that's a boatload, but still 84% of it is coming out of the fields that we heard about yesterday.
Okay, I didn't know it was that big. I thought we were one of the bigger ones, but okay.
Yeah, so that was the situation. And I think, let me pull up what I mentioned yesterday, too. 22% of China's petroleum reserve is in that area. 40% of its coal reserve is in that area. 28% of the natural gas reserve in the country is in that area. So as you said yesterday, you got it, we want it, let's take it.
Yeah.
That's a big part of what's going on, but a big part of it is just an ethnic cleanse, as we heard described yesterday. And this is why I keep saying that when I see these athletes who are standing up for social justice, and as they stand up for doing it, the shirt they're wearing has the swoosh on it, I got a problem with that.
I think we should. What happens if we run over and try to take down the Michael Jordan statue because he's been a Nike guy?
Yeah, and I don't want to get into those kinds of equivalencies because I get it. But what I will say is that it's just hypocritical that criticism of the Chinese government. Who was it? The general manager from the Rockets.
Yeah, yeah.
And the pushback that he got, especially from high-profile athletes, who were basically saying, "Hey, don't jeopardize our income stream."
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well,
it's exactly what they were saying. People only care.
And so I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it from those guys. It's not that they're wrong about some of the stances they're taking. It's that they're hypocritical, and I have a big problem with that.
Well, this is the same group that I've been catching a bunch of heat for saying our businessmen, the same people you're talking about, that same list of thieves, had to know that this virus was going all over the place in Wuhan, and still flew people back and forth. I mean, there's no way they didn't. This is just another nail in the coffin of these people, and I don't know what we do about it. SP Futures down a buck and a half. Nasdaq Futures down 142. Yikes. We'll be right back with a full report on the markets, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter: the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tim Allen. Mr. Matt Weber, the board. Mr. Kevin O'Neill with us, as he is every Friday. Well, just as we made the turn up when we came in, now we're making the turn down again. We got the S&P futures down 8 and NASDAQ futures down 160. Ouch. Dow is, they're still up like 40. So let's see what's up in the Dow. We got 3M. We got American Express. We got pretty much everybody's up in the Dow. We got Goldman Sachs, Home Depot coming back from big losses yesterday. Two that are down are the ones we're talking about. The big cap tech stocks. Microsoft's down 250, Apple down 309. So Apple's down to 317. As one guy pointed out last night, the 5% move yesterday in the high tower to the Nasdaq only got us back to like last Tuesday. So we'll see where we go from here, if we keep going or not. And some people think we're going to. I'll talk about those guys in a little bit. But over in Europe, we've got the DAX only down 55.4%. FTSE up 16.3%, CAC around up 14.2%. So not much going on there. In Asia, these guys, however, are coming with us. Nikkei down 260, 1.1%. Shanghai down 29, that's 1%. Hang Seng down 312, 1.25%. Bonds, 0.64, way below the 0.71 that were the other day. Bund is minus 0.48. Japan is positive 0.036. Oil, 41.78 as it bounced back up. Was under 40 yesterday. Brent up 33 cents, 44.40. Natural gas up 3 cents, 2.52. I think a lot of this has to do with, isn't there supposed to be a massive record heat bulb over the entire Southwest this weekend in California? So they probably got all those natural gas, what do they call those things, the short fire things up and going for air conditioning. RBOB at 120. We got gold bouncing back some here. It's up 780. 1945, silver up 15 cents, 27.02. Manny, what have we got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have major issues on the Dan Ryan for two reasons. One, apparently there was another shooting that happened overnight on the outbound side of the Ryan that has the local lanes closed between 63rd and the Skyway for police activity as they conduct that investigation.
The police.
So that's an issue on the outbound Ryan for the local lanes beginning at 63rd Street. Yeah. Then, just north of there, Chief, there was a motorcycle accident involving a motorcycle, which happened around 1 a.m. Witnesses say two victims went over the fence onto the CTA tracks. The victims were found and transported to nearby hospitals. Power has been cut off to the trains in the area. One reported fatality so far, and that has the Dan Ryan Express lanes on the outbound side between 47th and 51st closed due to an accident. So the Ryan is a complete mess right now on the outbound side, both affecting the express lanes and the local lanes due to two different incidents that happened earlier this morning. So avoid that if at all possible. No issues on the Bishop Ford right now. I-57 is quiet too, but obviously if you're heading toward the Ryan, you'll run into trouble. Stevenson is wide open. Same for the Eisenhower. Edens and Kennedy looking good. Suburban tollways are all quiet, as is Lakeshore Drive. Weather today, it's going to be a beautiful September day today. Partly cloudy skies, a high of 79 with low humidity, cool breeze. Right now it's very mild, 59 degrees and sunny this morning downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, a hot one today, sunshine with a high of 114. Right now it's clear and 84. In sports, the White Sox were all over the Royals last night, beating Kansas City 11-6. Cubs ended up taking 2 of 3 from the Pirates after blowing a 2-0 lead yesterday afternoon and losing in Pittsburgh 6-2. They'll head home for a big series against the second-place Cardinals. 5 games in 4 days beginning tonight at Wrigley, with the Cubs holding a 3.5-game lead over the Redbirds. Diamondbacks lost to the Dodgers 5-1. And the big news that came out yesterday, and I don't know if you guys had a chance to talk about this yesterday morning, but the Cubs announced a 10-year, $100 million partnership with DraftKings, the sports betting and fantasy sports company, to open a sports book at Wrigley Field. and they believe the on-site sports book will be ready by the end of 2022.
What does Lou accuse you of being, a moral relativist? Well, you're not so much anymore.
I don't even know what that means.
Yeah, you do.
I mean, I know what it means, but I don't know what you... I don't know when Lou's ever accused me of that.
Oh,
I don't
he has.
Know where you're going.
He has. He has on several occasions. Not so much lately. I said you've...
I don't think he ever has.
Oh, yeah. I'll ask him. You've grown out of it, though. So there.
How?
You've matured.
No, but what have I grown out of?
The fact that if you see somebody boiling somebody's head, you say, "Oh, that's okay for you." You know.
When did I ever said that?
You used to be more of one.
When? Name. I'm asking for one.
You've been
example.
With me for 10 years.
What, name one time. It should be easy.
I'll ask Lou. You used to do that all the time. Anyway.
Just another thing that you've made up.
Now you made me forget my train of thought here.
We were talking sports weather traffic. We talked the sports book.
How did we go from? If you consorted with a gambler, if you were seen with a gambler, a la Paul Horning and Alex Karras, you were suspended, to never being able to be even seen in a casino, all of a sudden you could do that in the off season, to not being part of anything, to having casino ads around Wrigley and on TV, to now where you're part of the place. And yet we still think that nobody's gambling on these games from the inside. I mean, how close can we get to these people before we say that's too close? When there's money involved,
I'm still trying to figure out how I'm involved in this.
I'm saying the morals have changed along the
way. Whose morals? Do I own the Cubs?
No.
Do I own DraftKings?
You wouldn't even.
Am I the governor of Illinois?
I'm just saying.
Am I the president?
Well, what my point was is now, well, there's money there. It's the very same thing as we talked about before the break. With the bad labor in China, I don't want to hear about it in my factory. What's the price? The Cubs really need in a world where you're supposed to be educating kids about the difference between gambling and sports, if there even is one anymore. That the Cubs have a partnership with the gambling place. I mean, that is so far different than 40 years ago. I can't even go there, and yet it gets there so gradually. So it's like the invasion of the roaches from the house next door or something. They get an inch over closer to the place.
Tom, it's like everything else. It's gradually and then suddenly.
Yeah.
Well, there used to be a very strict rule that there would never be sports teams in Vegas. Now there's a hockey team, there's a football team, and I assume basketball and baseball are on their way.
Well, I mean, I can
now, as far as the Cubs operation here, too, the co-founder of DraftKings, I think he nailed it. These are two organizations that share a mutual passion for innovation and commitment to excellence. It's a natural, Tom.
Yeah.
I like whoever wrote that.
Yeah, it's a... I mean,
it may be BS, but it's high-quality BS.
So we're saying that the player... the idea of one of the players that given one of the flunkies 500 hours ago put down on the game before the game, I mean, does anybody think that's not going to happen?
I read at least I was under the impression that owners of sports teams could not also own gambling establishments.
This week.
Well, I thought the Houston Rockets owner owns a bunch of casinos and restaurants, doesn't he?
A bunch of the Fattata guy?
Yeah. Doesn't he own... I know he owns restaurants, but I thought he owned casinos,
I don't know
too.
If he owns restaurants.
He probably owns restaurants that are in casinos.
That's what I was thinking.
Okay, that could be. But I was pretty sure, and I'll have to reread, but I'm pretty sure he owns casinos because people were saying the Ricketts got around this because they can't actually own the sports book, so they're partners in the sports book somehow. It's a DraftKings-owned operation, and the Cubs have some sort of, I don't know, pay structure or something.
The Cubs will lease the space to them.
Yeah, exactly. And so they're not technically owners.
For quite a bit of money, too.
It's sort of like, talk about a little bit of history and get back to the finance a little bit. Our man, David, who sends me all kinds of good stuff, but he also sends me some crazy stuff from the right. But they were ranting one day, and I very seldom engage. And one day they were ranting about how Bill Clinton caused all this because he stopped the, what's the act? The banks couldn't hold an investment bank, couldn't be the same as a commercial bank. That was it, Kevin. So it should be on the tip of my tongue.
That was a big one, but I think that happened in the 80s, didn't it?
It was early on Clinton, I think. I was on the floor.
Yeah, it was part of the deregulation, and I forget who's...
Was it Robinson Patman, was it? No.
No.
It was one of those acts. But the interesting part was, Now, of course, it's all a Democrat's fault, right? The Democrats have done this to us. But the but when you start ranting like this, you're never supposed to
Glass-Steagall.
Glass-Steagall, thanks, man.
Yes.
But the you're never supposed to actually go into the history. And the reason why, when that thing was repealed, basically nobody gave a bleep. It's sort of like the same thing we're talking about with the companies in China and the Eisenhower administration. Somebody put through something called the Bank Holding Company Act, like 1958 or God knows when. And that act said that even though a commercial bank could not be an investment bank, it had to be separated, you could have a holding company that owned both. Now,
and as I said,
sure, as long as you had a firewall between them, was
allegedly
the way had to be separately capitalized so that if one went down, the other did not.
Right, allegedly. But if the holding company goes down, they both go down. So I'm sorry, but so you ended up, you couldn't have Citibank could not be an investment bank, but Citigroup could own Citibank and Smith Barney. So it's never just out of the blue we decided to get rid of this act that people were paying attention to all along.
Yeah, so Glass-Steagall went into effect in 1933.
Yeah.
And then beginning in the 80s, a 25-year period, Congress debated bills to repeal Glass-Steagall, and then it finally was signed into law in 1999. So it was a 25-year process of Congress chipping away, and then completely repealed it.
Well, because nobody thought it was a good idea until finally at the end they said, look, it doesn't even do any good anymore. So what's the point? So you can have Citigroup owning Citibank.
It's not a good idea because we've completely undermined it.
Yeah.
To the point where it's not a good idea.
Exactly.
So I guess the difference is the final argument is how can Citigroup be own Smith Barney and Citibank, essentially the same capital, but Morgan Stanley can't be an investment bank what's the difference? Why do they have to be Morgan Stanley Holding to own both of them?
So, well, and it's those kinds of questions that caused us to keep chipping away at it.
Right. But I really do wonder, it goes back to this, I will criticize the man, more than anybody, I hope, or not I hope, but probably. But the amount of crap that Trump took, stopping the planes from China, a lot of it from Joe Biden, by the way, would we have expected our firms to stop sending their people over there when they knew there was a problem? I mean, these firms, we're talking felonies by the day or immorality by the day with these people. Actually, one of the questions I was going to ask the gentleman yesterday was, and I didn't get to, and I'm wondering if I was too close to the knitting, I was going to ask him, is it possible? I mean, Kevin and I can't believe it, Kevin. I'll say this, you and I think alike. Is it possible for somebody from the U.S.
That should frighten you.
Yeah, it does. But is it possible for somebody from the U.S. who's being supplied from one of these factories to go over there and not notice something afoot? Can they hide it enough when they know they got a tour that day and all of a sudden those guys stay in the camps and don't come in? Is there any attempt to hide it on the Chinese side? Or people just say, I don't care?
Well, I suspect that there is at least some attempt to put a pretty face on it. It's like, we have some people coming through the factory today. You better clam up. But I still don't believe that knowing how important the geopolitics are and how important the internal activities of that country are to the ongoing business relationship, that I don't believe that they don't know. You have to willfully ignore to not be able to do it. And it's not like none of these people subscribe to services like, a Stratfor or something like that, that will constantly detail what's going on. They have to have all kinds of intelligence sources. It's also not possible that the United States doesn't know what's going on because the United States has all kinds of intelligence sources. And in fact, we have we have issued sanctions or we have restricted 11 Chinese companies over this very issue, but they can't buy American technology and goods. There's, you know, there's only so much you are able to do, but we at least have made some moves to put some restrictions on the companies, the Chinese companies that are involved in this practice.
Do we think here, and from a, you know, an investment story, do we think our people, I say our people, and I hate to put Trump and Biden in the same group, because one of them is going to be president, unfortunately. Can we put our people in the...
We're holding out for the meteor.
Yeah, we're holding out for the meteors, right.
Me too, man.
Hey, you don't want a meteor, man. You got too nice of a wife, and what's poor Venkman going to do if
you're right? I've actually been enjoying sort of checking out of the whole thing, and I hate to say that, but it has been nice.
Plus, Venkman, what would he do?
He'd probably survive a meteor.
Yeah, but if you guys aren't around, take him 12 walks a day and sleep with him, what is he going
to do? He'd latch on to the remaining survivors.
I don't think he'd have anywhere near as good.
He'd be just fine, and he would bark at the meteor, too.
he'd definitely bark at the meteor.
I guarantee he would not have as good a deal as he has now.
Well, that's true.
That guy's got the life of Riley, if they're ever... Anyway, who's got it better, him or the dog downstairs, for God's sake?
They both have it pretty good.
But kind of where I'm going with this is does anybody... I'm going to put this in investment stage. If somebody came by next week and hopped on Stocks and Jacks and says, hey, you know what? We get all our... by the way, you notice your brother Dan, who loves the bike, and not to mention I'm sure a lot of listeners do, you can't buy a friggin' part for a bike anywhere, in case you haven't noticed. I mean, he's been, a month trying to get a tube. It's the entire supply chain is somewhat broken down. Now, I don't think that when Trump does the things he does... Never stops to read the detail about how much we really are in bed with these guys. Now, how would change his policy or not, I don't know, but he shouldn't be shocked by what's happening.
Well, like I said, they have, you know, his administration has started pushing back on some of the countries, the companies involved in this. So it's a step. That's all I'd call it. It looks to me like a baby step, but it's a step.
Well, now the question is, do we have any sort of backbone in this country? I mean, Trump, is our president. Now, if he says, and is rightly so, that these Chinese guys got to straighten out a little bit, because, by the way, they're building military stuff only to fight one person, that's us. Now, if somebody comes on next week, Matty Weber's bro, not that he knows anything about bike tubes, comes on and says, look, looks to me like all the bike tubes are coming from China. By the way, they're not coming here anymore. I want money. I'm going to put on the south side a bike tube factory. And guess what? In 6 months, we're going to be pumping out, 200 a day, and in a year, we're going to be 2,000 a day, and we're going to take this market back. Now, would we invest in this company, or are we to assume that if Biden wins, everything's okay with the Chinese and the bikes start flying in there from child and slave labor, or if Trump wins, after he gets back in, he doesn't care about China anymore, he doesn't have to be a tough guy, and the same thing happens. I mean, do we have any idea on the investment side that there's any sort of resolve on this issue, or we're going to drop right back and just give me the cheapest damn tube you can find?
Well, we did see pre-COVID, I don't know where it stands now other than, what I sent you yesterday about RV manufacturing, but that's I don't think that's tied to any big policy thing. It's just people who don't want to, who want to travel but not stay in a hotel. But we're seeing manufacturing growth in the United States. And I don't know that a lot of that was, coming back versus startup, but some of it was expansion, of existing operations. But regardless, when you start, what has to happen really to make supply chains better is more domestic manufacturing. And to provide alternatives to the cheap labor parts. And the only way that a U.S. company is going to realistically provide an alternative to cheap labor, first of all, you got to look at the entire cost. So you're paying for cheaper labor, but you're also paying for transportation to get your products from there to here. And the cumbersome distribution processes in there. So that's a little bit of an offset to it that you can beat by sourcing in the United States. But ultimately, it's going to come down to more automation in the manufacturing processes. And I think you're seeing that. And I think what companies get out of those parts is better integrity of the parts themselves that they used to buy overseas, higher quality, fewer rejects, etc. And they get much shorter lead times from order to receipt. You know, you get away from that 6-week lead time, because if you have demand shifts and you're on a 6-week lead time, you're not very responsive to it. So that's the one side of it. The only way you're going to get to those high levels of automation is large amounts of capital expenditures. And as long as we want to recover the capital expenditures in 2 years, the unit costs of the product are going to have to be high. You're starting to see more companies that are willing to recover their capital expenditures in 5 years. And now you can price accordingly so that you don't have to achieve this fully absorbed cost nut of the capital expenditure on an accelerated depreciation schedule. So I think that's part of that's part of the shift. That's one of those slowly, and then suddenly you start to see that there's a lot of it in place.
Well, I'm not against,
and it takes time, but I think that's where we're going. That's my read of where we're going from, you know, my kind of immersion in supply chains and manufacturing automation.
Well, I think the issues that the guys, the ilk that were around when we started this World Trade stuff, well, we always did it somewhat, but the Milton Friedman era people, they totally were misguided in the sense that they assumed that everybody we traded with was going to be like Japan and Europe, where if you started trading with people, their guys all of a sudden demanded or got, or however they did it, supply and demand, ended up with real wage increases to the point where not only they weren't that much cheaper than our people, if at all, they became customers. And that's the beauty of it, and that's how theoretically it's supposed to work. But now you jump in, and I think it has happened. In places like South Korea.
It doesn't work very well when you can enslave the people.
Well, I'm saying I think it has worked very well in South Korea. I think it's worked pretty well in Vietnam and to a certain extent in Thailand. I mean, some places. And certainly in Canada. I mean, because they make as much there as they do here. But now Mexico is just as much of a question mark as China. How is it those guys are still making $3 an hour or not much more for putting the Chevys together down there?
Wait. Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see if USMCA has any effect on that. My guess is not a lot, but some.
But I mean, there were
potentially some.
But there were people in this country. I have a matter of fact. Where is it? I'll dig it up right now, just to prove. You know, you can't just be saying stuff all the time, like many accuses me of. In this country, I have in 1947. What was so significant about that year, other than the 47 Chevys came out? That particular year was the year on the household data annual averages. We decided people in the workforce were not everybody 14 years of age or older, but people 16 years of age and older. Isn't that wild? I mean, it wasn't that long ago. That people, if you were 14, you were considered in the workforce in 1947. So we had people in this country that were more than happy to hire 14-year-old girls that would have gotten how much they paid them to sit there and sew buttons on all day long, right? So it's not like the names you rattle off as the firms, Kevin, weren't anxious to do that here as well in some backwoods factory that nobody could find. If the same people are doing the same thing in some place in China that nobody can find. And it's a problem. I think people need to be, you don't want to be in a situation, I'll say like Chicago is, or like Illinois is, where you have a municipality every four blocks in some of the areas here. I mean, you don't want that. But you also don't want to be in a situation where your big companies just play one government off and against another. I mean, the governments can't allow that to happen, and yet they do. And part of what I mean, and Trump has recognized that that is happening, and his response is to pull out of the stuff. Now, I don't know if that's just his way of a real estate deal. I'm pulling out, and let's get back in. I suspect that's it. I hope that's it. But I really don't think that he thinks that the U.S. as a world player can never be part of the WHO, even if they straighten up. I mean, I hope he doesn't think that.
Well, I don't know, but it would be pretty typical of him to say, I'm backing off, I'm pulling the funding. All of a sudden, he gets the concessions he needs, and he goes. His negotiating style is drop the bomb and then see if you can negotiate off of
that. Kevin, it is not mine, and it's not yours. But some of the
correct.
People he's negotiating with, it could very well
it's
be
theirs too.
It could be theirs too. You know, I mean, there's a huge difference in a real estate transaction, because I've been in a few, than trading on the floor when you make 150 to 200 trades a day with the same people. I mean, you can't be every single time you do a trade thinking you're letting the other guy know that you screwed him or you're pulling out if it doesn't go your way. I mean, that's a whole different world. That's not my world. But I also
I also think, you know, Trump has been, since he started running, has been talking about China, and I think his instinct is that there is a problem with the United States' relationship with China. I don't think it's altruistic. I don't think he's, you know, even though they have taken some measures about the companies that are using the labor camps, I don't think that's ever been what's driving him. I think it's transactional. I think he wants a better deal,
yeah,
a more favorable deal. I don't know that there's this altruistic thing that says, well, we don't do business with people like that.
Well, but the thing, I don't know what's going on behind.
I think he would be happy to do business with people like that on the right terms.
But on the one hand, well, we got a dash here, Kevin, on one hand, you're right. The other hand, the fact that the companies we think that are the most nefarious, Nike and Apple and those have done the best under his administration, you wonder if it's a total phony act. Or else they, you know, they're so entrenched you can't do anything about them. It's one of those three things.
No, I think it's consistent with what I just said.
Yeah.
That, you know, if they can get the right deal, they'll go.
All right, bud.
And, you know, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm criticizing the man without a right basis for it. But I just don't. As Lou has often said, he's not ideological. It's all transactional to him.
All right, bud. And we got a dash. We got Carl coming on talking about the labor numbers. Beyond a half hour, we're looking at what 1.25 million or something like that. And we'll see. We will talk to Kevin. Have a nice weekend. Talk to you next Wednesday. S&P futures now down 10. NASDAQ futures down 148. So no rest for NASDAQ here. Be right back. Stocks and Jocks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Ollie, Mr. Webber on the board. S&P futures up, I'm sorry, down 7. NASDAQ futures down 130. The NASDAQ is getting drilled here for like the, well, the second day in a row for sure. We'll see how far that goes. We have Mr. Carl Denninger from MarketTicker.org. Carl, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing? I'm
doing fine. We have the labor numbers coming out today, so you're our labor man and other, actually, you're everything for us, but you're is your particular expertise that none of the rest of us seem to have. What's up? What do you think the numbers are going to show today? They're talking like 1.2 million, right?
Yeah, it's really tough to tell. I mean, it's part of the, you know, this is, you get into the sample thing, right, which is always part of the issue. And as, you know, as I've pointed out before in previous years, before all this crazy stuff started, while this month typically tends to be pretty good, next month is normally a firing month because the summer help gets let go. So September, I would expect to see, you know, fairly substantial negative print in a on an unadjusted basis in a normal year. The problem this year is that there really wasn't a summer hiring.
Yeah, I was going to say, where did that happen?
Well, exactly. It's because. What I just saw a report that we're down some number of stupid billions of miles driven for June year over year because of course nothing's actually open. I mean, there's normally this time of year I'd be gallivanting and cavorting around various parts of the United States and, you know, going and doing things outdoors and being out in the woods and, you know, whatever have you. Well, this year, no, because I'm not going to go spend money where you have various governors and mayors making me act like I'm in an operating room in order to go buy groceries. Yeah. It's not going to do it.
Carly.
And so that's, you tell me how many of those people that would have been hired to, to serve those requirements from the people that are out there didn't get hired, and therefore, you know, how's that going to translate in September? I don't know. My guess is you're going to see a positive print, simply because there have been some people that have come back as a result of the expiration of the $600 stay at home and get drunk subsidy.
Yeah.
But I don't know that it's enough to tip the scales to the degree that people think it is.
Well, you know, it's always interesting. I mean, and you have a higher field of vision than most, but still it's hard for you to envision like $1 trillion type of thing. It's hard for me, I know. So I can't believe it's easy for you. But the weird part is when the 600 bucks was flying around, right? Of course, all kinds of people are totally pissed off, right? This goes on to my, same as my years on the board of the CBOE, and what people focus on, and they always, and I'm not accusing you of this, I'm just saying people focus on people at their same level, guys that they think are equals, guys and ladies, getting a break when you're not. But it's really hard for somebody who is a lunch bucket guy, which I consider myself. I just happen to come to an office and manage money, but I don't carry a lunch bucket. I make lunch for everybody. It's really hard for me to get my hands around, United Airlines still paying executives type of thing, or Boeing or somebody getting billions of dollars. Because the weird part of the $600, by the way, and I agree with you on that, it should have been a little, somewhat less and longer, I don't know if you've read through this stuff, we had a listener send it to me, and I thought I'd put it down somewhere. I probably have it. How many people in the state of Illinois got money on this, the paycheck for PPP?
Yeah.
And there's 27,000 companies in Illinois got over $150,000.
Oh, yeah. No, when that original spreadsheet was published, I grabbed the whole copy because, it was a public data, right? Yeah. So I pulled it all down and start digging through there at some of the local businesses and such. And I was astounded. And then some others that I know about in other parts of the country that I'm like, oh, they shouldn't have been able to qualify. Right. Well, guess what they did? The list was amazing. And I'm looking at this going, these guys got this much? These guys got this much? These guys? And all of that money in one way or another got spent.
Well, I've got two more points here, and then I'll let you expound. The two things are, I know people here that said, well, I'm still got people working. I don't deserve that. I said, it's not about whether you deserve it or not. They're inflating the hell out of the economy. They're degrading the currency that you currently have. If you don't participate in this, you're doing yourself a serious disservice. And for once in your life, your Southside life like mine, look at how the law is written and don't say, that's wrong. I can't do that, which I do all the time, Carl. There's plenty of times I could have taken advantage on the side of when I was on the trading floor now, and I just won't do it. I don't look to see what the law is. I'll say that's just not right. But in this particular instance, if the law says that if you were going to pay people anyway, you don't deserve the money, that's not what it says. It says we're going to give you the money, and if you pay people, it's forgiven. That's what it says. Do it.
Right.
But where I'm getting to here very clumsily is what people like you and I, even though I think we're, on a scale of 1 to 10, we're not a 1, but we're clearly not a 9, where we're looking for billion-dollar numbers coming at us. That whole amount of money, all that dough that went for the PPP and the $1,200 checks that went to people and the $600 a week, which is really the first time, maybe you could tell me I'm wrong here, but the first time in my lifetime that some of this money ever really made it down to the lower levels of people. Now, I'm not saying that's a big plus for this Congress or Trump, but even they said if we're going to throw this money out, we got to throw a bone to the schmoes like us. That all that dough together, by my calculation, is only 1/6 of the money that these guys are spending. And nobody ever asks about the other 5/6 because you've buried them. People are going to call up and say, even you might say, Jesus, Chief, these bleeps that have the garbage contract with Oak Lawn, they were getting paid every day. They never missed a beat. Why the hell did they get the dough? It's sort of not the point. I mean, it was available. They got it. They almost needed it to keep pace with the currency. And guess what? About the other 5/6 we don't even know about.
I agree with you. In that you can say, well, that's an absolutely stupid thing you shouldn't take advantage of. But the other side of it is, the guy across the street is.
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, it's like, this is similar to the kind of thing that happened when, I was running my internet company back in the 90s, and Clinton did the thing with expensing on capital equipment for 2 years.
Right.
Okay, well, did I have to do that? Well, of course I didn't have to, but I would have been flat out crazy.
Right.
Not to take that accelerated depreciation and expense that gear. That would have been nuts.
Well,
I'm going to pay taxes on revenue that I don't have to pay taxes on because there's this $400,000 piece of gear in my back room that, that I'm going to put on a depreciation schedule instead? Are you out of your mind?
Well, it comes down to simple currency theory that if somebody's dumb enough, read the Fed. If you have a small town, you know, call it hometown or someplace, with 1,000 people living there, and some idiot drops $20 in everybody's mailbox every day, you know, after a period of time, it's going to cause problem with prices, it's going to cause problems with a lot of stuff, right? But by the same token, you can't be the guy that says, this is wrong, I'm cutting my mailbox down.
Well, yeah, exactly. And you know, part of what's happening right now is that you've had so much of this get taken up and so much of the game theory side of it get taken up by the market. Yesterday, you saw a fairly decent piece of that crack.
Right.
Okay, and there was a warning that was coming a couple of days earlier, because we saw all those stocks that had split, you know, specifically Apple and Tesla. They split, and on the day after the split's effective, they both declined fairly materially. That usually doesn't happen. It's the hype of, oh, it's easier for people to get in, which is a load of BS these days anyway,
right?
Because you've got all the ETFs out there. It used to be that the reason you split your stock, there were no ETFs. If you wanted to buy IBM, you had to buy IBM. Now you can buy any one of, you know, 1,000 ETFs that happen to have IBM in it, and so the whole argument for it is much less, you know, pervasive than it has been. But nonetheless, the psychology is that stock splits are good because they bring in people who otherwise couldn't afford to buy it. All right. And of course, you know, the mathematics is that the company's worth exactly the same amount the day of, yeah, after the split, as the day before the split. Doesn't change anything.
You know what, Kyle, I'll give you two things. I'll push, by the way, I agree with you 100%, except I do think as a guy who manages money, it is in somebody, say I didn't mind just buying an ETF, which I do a lot of, by the way. It's hence the protected index program. But if I didn't, if they didn't have ETFs, I don't know how exactly, even if you handed me, you know, one of your millions and said, Chief, manage this, how the hell, if I didn't use the ETFs, could I get, you know, a stack in there that's $3,000, especially if I want to do any kind of option hedging on it, and maybe, you know, have some puts in case I need them, or a covered call program. I mean, what am I going to do with two shares of Amazon? It is, I think, pretty dumb for a stock to be that high, to be honest with you. Now, whether or not, back in the day when you paid an eighth through for an odd lot, and when your commissions were definitely more for an odd lot, it was much more difficult for you to do that. Now that isn't the case. But you know what's interesting? This number, or this thought about splits, has been with us, you know, since the Stone Age. When I was in grad school, they did a big study. I said this the other day. Doesn't make it right. Just means I'm repeating. Is it about whether or not stock splits are good for a company or not? Because obviously everybody knows the math. It doesn't do anything. So they went through and they analyzed University of Chicago. They did this. They were the biggest first in all these things. You know, at the end of a 2-year study, guess what the conclusion was, Carl?
Huh.
You couldn't tell. Now, the question is, why can't you tell? Well, because inevitably, the day in those days, you know, stuff didn't leak out. It wasn't on Twitter. The press release that came out and announced the stock split never just said, we have a stock split, period. There was, we beat earnings last year, or we're raising
right.
our earnings item, or we're raising the dividend and we're splitting. There was always another piece of good news with the split. So you could never differentiate. Because by and large, if you went back, there's no doubt the day the split was announced, stocks went up. I mean, more often than that. But now the question is, was it because of the split, which is mathematically does nothing, or is it because, oh, by the way, we're raising the dividends, oh, by the way, we're increasing our outlook. So you could never split it apart.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but that's, you know, but that's just kind of the way that all this, you know, this sort of thing, when you get down to it, there's, you know, things that are nulls, okay?
Yeah.
You may not like them, but that's how it is. And I just, what I see happening, though, today, is the same sort of insanity and mania that was happening in 1999.
Absolutely.
And, you know, there is certainly no change in the business prospects of any of these companies that validates the sort of moves that have been seen over the last 3-4 months. I mean, just, there's, I don't care how you slice it, I don't care what kind of thing you say, well, you know, this company will take share from this company because of the pandemic or whatever. You can make all kinds of arguments, but you can't get to the magnitudes that are being expressed in price.
Carl, let me ask you, forget for a second Because I, by the way, I doesn't mean you're on the right track if I agree with you. 100% agree with the four or five stocks, but it kind of always gets that way. But let me ask you this though, because I had a long conversation yesterday with a new client. All I'm saying, he's a baseball player, or was a baseball player, terrific guy, and he. We're talking about the difference between when I do the Protect Index program. It didn't used to matter. Well, first of all, Carl, back in the day when we did it in the 90s, your only thing you put it in was a spider, right? It was the only ETF. It was worth a crap. And then after a while, we had two track records, a spider and the QQQ. Well, now the biggest thing is trying to pick, you're almost picking a basket of ETFs, which makes it very difficult to do a track record, by the way. Because even though you're doing the right thing vis-a-vis the Russell isn't doing squat compared to the QQQ. So you're behind the eight ball because you picked the wrong index, or the client might have picked the wrong index and he's blaming it on you, type of thing. But kind of where I'm going is that is there, because of this pandemic, and is there because of the mortgages and all the stuff, is it possible that, I have clients that say, well, we better play a bounce in the Russell. The economy never gets better without. Is it possible that the top 100 companies have finally made it to the goal line, and nobody else is ever coming back except them, Carl? I mean,
we better hope that that's not the case.
But I mean, right now, do I think that the Russell, let's say for the next 10 years, is never coming back to the Qs, coming back that way? I mean, I don't know. I'm asking you the question because I want to know.
That is a very real possibility. One of the things that I've pointed out in some of my writings and the podcast that I've done over the last couple months is that the one thing that this bug has done is, first off, it has validated the fraud as a business model thing that I've been talking about for 10 plus years now. We now have enough hard data in enough different places, including the county that I live in today, to prove conclusively that the death rate from this disease, unless you actively mismanage it, if you do not commit at least gross negligence and possibly manslaughter, okay, this bug is no more lethal than the flu. People look at me and they say, well, that's impossible. Look at all these dead people. I said, no, you have to drill down into the county level, because viruses are viruses. They don't, they don't discriminate against, one person. They don't know what color your skin is or any of this other stuff. And so the reality is that it is the difference in how people have acted and what they have done that leads to different outcomes, not the bug. This going on. Look, I've got the data here. I got 6 months worth of data in this county. We have a death rate that is statistically identical to influenza.
You're on a scale of 1 to 10, and this your side of these beliefs. You're a 10, and I'm going to say I'm an 8.5, Carl. I'm pretty much right with you, but I do believe. And I hear, I'm the central focus here of a lot of people writing into me. I do believe that there are pockets of people that are really getting the shit beat out of them by this, to be honest with you.
Well, they are.
I've heard from one of my friends from Notre Dame, who's been on the show on occasion, maybe more than occasion, I'll leave the name out, who knows a boatload of African-American families in South Bend. It's been really, really rough on them. Really rough on them. Way more than any average, any statistic. But
again, there is those places that did criminally stupid or worse things. And by the way, that's not just in the context of this bug. We have done many of those criminally stupid or worse things over the space of decades. And now the wages of this are coming back at us in many ways. Yeah, this is one of the ways that it's coming back.
But these are not. These are not street black people. This is middle and upper class black people.
Oh no, I understand that. But look, there is a susceptibility difference to severe outcomes, not to getting it, because nobody with half a brain in their head believes that a virus discriminates upon which nose it goes up. Right?
Yeah.
you have to be crazy to believe that. But that there's an outcome difference that has, you know, that has some sensitivity in that area. That's in the data. I've noted this, that when you look at where the suppression rate is in different counties, and it's on a county by county basis and on a state by state basis. Louisiana and Georgia, for example, both rolled over about 50 basis points higher than states that have fewer black people in them. All right, and that's, you can't keep looking at the same data that keeps coming back from disparate areas. Our county, for example, versus Knox County, which has more black people in it than Sevier County does. And Davidson County, which is Nashville. And you look at this on a county by, you break it down. Now, Hawkins County is another one that is not, okay, and has the data going the other way. And you keep going, and everywhere you look, you see the same patterns. And the only thing you can conclude from that is that there is a demographic sensitivity to outcomes. Not to whether or not you get it, but to outcomes. The problem that we have with the data we've got now is that we are declaring people to have had this bug. We're declaring positives based upon a test that has never been diagnostic for any disease. And yet, what we're not looking at is the outcome numbers in a rational way. The state of Tennessee just yesterday got caught. They took their declaration of an active case, supposedly from 21 days from test, from positive result, to 14. Okay, now that's a third, right? Approximately.
Yep.
So you would expect that about a third of the active cases would roll off. Well, they didn't. They went from 465 in this county to 150 in one day.
Well,
so they went down by two thirds. Well, that's crazy.
Yeah.
So where's the rest of the fraud? And by the way, this is statewide. Okay, this didn't just happen in one county. This was the entire state got recast like this. So now if I'm trying to run statistical analysis on this, you just destroyed my data set.
Well, you also, Carl, right, we have people doing this, and I'm not going to, I guess I'm going to impinge on, the Pritzkers, the Lightfoots, even the federal people. The idea, and you see this state by state. It's on every newscast. They talk about the positivity rate.
Right, which is worthless.
Why does the numerator, however many people decide to have a beer and go get a test, why does that have anything to do with anything?
It doesn't, and the other problem you have with the positivity rate is that if you are going to be intellectually consistent, you want people, you do not want to spend $100 a test and make Quest Diagnostics and others rich on pointless tests.
Right.
Alright? The higher the positivity rate, the smarter the doctors are that are administering the test.
That's right.
The whole point of a test is to confirm something.
Well, you don't normally have a disease with no symptoms for people. This is unusual area.
But it's not a disease. Look, the definition of disease requires a disorder at some process in the human body.
Right. Well, you don't have a...
Otherwise, you're not diseased.
All right. You don't have an infection that... Well, actually, you probably do have a lot of it. We have to go to break here in a second and talk about the numbers, but I have one for you regarding the... I mean, your somewhat quest for this T-cell immunity thing. I went to see my... He's advertised on the show, Dr. Miller. Terrific guy. Chiropractor. We were talking a little bit. I went there trying to do something with his body. By the way, he is very good. And he says, there was a bug that came through here in February. He goes, I'm not a doctor. I'm a chiropractor. He goes, there's a bug that came through here. We all had it. He goes, I think your girlfriend Audrey was sick as a female dog for a month.
Yeah.
And he goes, and this guy said, he's had some issues. So I got tested. It wasn't the flu. And I got tested by COVID because I assumed that's what it was. I don't have any antibodies. He goes, this thing came through here. Everybody in the place got it. Most of my patients had it or knew somebody who did. He goes, nobody can figure out what it was. He goes, but not one of those people has had COVID. So.
Yeah. And see, the thing is that's, there was a really nasty bug that I got in January. Before all this stuff was a thing, but the symptomology, with the exception of the loss of taste or smell, was exactly identical to what everyone's saying COVID is. And yet, I've run an antibody test on myself because I managed to get my hands on a few of them, and I'm negative.
It has to be, somebody was explaining to me, some doctor, that out of all the different kinds of colds, there's like four that are COVID.
That's correct. There's four coronaviruses that cause colds.
And, I mean, he was saying it had to have been one of those. I mean,
maybe, yeah, maybe. You know. But, you know, but you don't pop positive. See, the thing is this, if you're resistant, you're resistant. So you get exposed, but you don't get sick. So who cares?
Right. Well, whatever it is, but I'm saying we've been curious as to why some people don't get it, right?
Yeah, maybe we don't really know, though. And we haven't been able to isolate the particular, you know, genetic pattern, if you will, right, of whatever the previous thing is you got that made you partially or completely immune.
Well, I just lobbed you one useless fact.
Yeah, well, that's a possibility. We just don't know. We haven't been able to confirm it.
Hey, we're back here. We're going to back here with the numbers. Plus, you're going to tell us what the difference is between marginally employed and unemployed when we come back. we'll be right back. Stocks and Jocks, SP Futures down 9, NASDAQ Futures down 150.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits.
Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howie, Mr. Matt Weber, also Mr. Carl Denninger, as we do every Labor Friday. And the labor number just came out at 1.37, unemployment rate down to 8.4. We'll go through those in detail. That's a little much. We went from down 10 in the spoos to up a quarter, to now we're down 3.5. So we're all over the black. NASDAQ, however, still down 140-something, so it hasn't moved hardly at all. Dow futures up 35. Over in Europe, we've got... So they hit one button instead of two. There we go. DAX down 52.4%. The FTSE turned north here. They're up 12.2. CAC around up 9.2 as well. Over in Asia, Nikkei still down. Well, they're done trading, so they're not going to change. Nikkei down 260, 1.1%. Shanghai down 29.9%. Hang Seng down 312, 1.25%. So we're down over there. Bonds 0.66. Actually up 4.32nd, or 4 basis points, sorry. They were down to 62, which was really not good yesterday. Bund, minus 0.47, and we've got the Japan 10-year, a positive 0.036. We've got oil up 17 cents, 41.54, so coming back from down to 40, or maybe a little below the other day. Brent up 9 cents, 44.16. Natural gas, 2.51, as it's up, creeping up a little bit again, I guess probably because of this big hot weekend they're supposed to be having on the Southwest. Our Bob unchanged at 120. And we get gold right here. Gold is up $7. 1944. Silver up 5 cents. 26.93. Maybe we got for us traffic, weather, sports.
35 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Earlier issues on the Dan Ryan are all clear, so that's good news. You can now speed into downtown or outbound on the Ryan without issue, as we had closures both on the local and express lanes due to various incidents that happened overnight. No issues now, so that's good news. I-57 and the Bishop Ford have been open all morning. No issues there. Stevenson looking good. A bit of a slowdown near Cicero, but that's normal. Eisenhower has quiet in both directions. Edens and Kennedy looking good, too. Kennedy, you'll start to hit the brakes heading in around Division, but no accidents or delays to report. Lakeshore Drive is quiet. We do have some accidents off the expressways in the western suburbs. Fairview Avenue at 2nd Street, there's a crash. And then up near Roosevelt Road at Baker Hill Drive, there is a crash that's causing a slowdown. And then northeast of there, Oak Meadows Drive at Illinois 83, which is Kingery Highway, there is an accident there. Weather today, a beautiful day here in Chicago. Mild temperatures, a low humidity, a high of 79 with lots of sunshine. Right now it's clear and 60 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny and hot with a high of 114. Right now it's clear and 85. In sports, White Sox beat the Royals 11-6. Cubs lost to the Pirates 6-2. Diamondbacks lost to the Dodgers 5-1. And as we talked about a bit in the first hour, the Cubs announced a 10-year, $100 million partnership with DraftKings, the gambling and sportsbook company, to open a sportsbook at Wrigley Field by the end of 2022. Chief.
I think when once his name's pitching there, he should be able to go to the slot machine. What's his name?
I don't know if they're going to have slots, but they will have a window to place bets.
Why can't I just have it right in front of me in my iPad on my seat?
You will. You can, in fact, you're encouraged to download the app and place bets as you're walking into the park and sit down and watch the game and cheer on your bets. And then afterward, you can stop by the sports book and cash in tickets or bet physical tickets. That's what they're, that's the whole thing.
So, what if the guy, what is his name, Gartman?
Who's that?
Who's the guy who supposedly snagged the foul ball?
Steve Bartman?
Bartman.
Yeah.
What if they just found out that he just put a $1,000 bet against the Cubs?
Then the death threats would have been even worse, probably.
Yeah, somehow the morality now, we're melting gambling and sports together, Carl.
Gambling and sports have always been together, but now they're...
it's unabashed. Like, they don't care. It's
the proximity is a problem.
I would agree.
I mean, that people bet on sports is nothing new, as everyone knows. But I don't know that there's necessarily anything more right or wrong of betting on sports or betting on anything else. But when you put the when you put the betting right in the middle of the contest, where you're physically present and you could potentially interfere with the outcome, boy, we got potential problems there, don't we?
Well, I'm worried about what about the players?
Yeah, that's what I mean. How easy is
it? Well, that too. Yeah.
How easy would it be for Anthony Rizzo? And I don't think he would ever do this, but for him to give $500 to one of his buddies and have them go place a bet for or against his team, and then he can
very easy, you know? Very easy, and that's one of the problems with the corruption that can come along with this sort of thing. So,
well, it's not so much the bet; it's what if you're in debt,
right?
And people have gotten in debt. They're worried about, you know, when I used to, actually the guy who just died, Thompson and Ricky Henderson, both on the same night in the, what the hell was that? It was in the Flamingo, and those two guys both walked by. I even recognized Ricky Henderson. Imagine that. Thompson, you can't miss. The guy's huge. He's like 6'8", I mean, a big man. I'm thinking about is, what if Ricky Henderson owes, the Flamingo $4 million? They tell him to throw a game. I didn't realize, Manny, being not as up on this as you, is you now can, there's a run spread?
Yeah.
When did that start?
Before I was born.
No, there never was. There was a run spread, but it was all
in
just
my lifetime. There's always been a run spread.
I've never seen one. All the years I went to Vegas, I never saw one.
Yeah, you can bet the run spread, but nobody does, because you really. I mean, I guess people do. I shouldn't say no one does. It's usually a 1.5 run spread.
Yeah,
and you can bet either way, and the odds are one way or the other. But typically, people bet the money line in baseball.
The last time I've been to Vegas in 10 years, but last time I was there was no run spread that I could see. It's all just the money line.
Yeah, I mean, on the big board, I think they might only post the money line, but you can typically bet a run spread.
Really?
Definitely on all the apps. I don't know about the sports book. I assume you can.
I think you can get a puck spread in hockey now, which I never dreamed you'd get. Anyway, all right, Carl, what do you think of this number? But again, it's what, 1.37, Matty, and the unemployment rate's 8.4.
That's right.
Hey, before you do that, though, Carl, here, because I got my A1 page up. You told me it's always the wrong page. I also have my debtclock.org up here. And
right.
they start talking about the difference between employed and marginally employed here. They talk about official unemployed and actual unemployed. Now, actual unemployed, I'm going to give you their definition. You tell me what yours is, which is a total unemployed plus all marginally attached workers, whatever that means, plus total employed part-time workers that would rather be full-time, in other words, for economic reasons. So how does that all work together? I mean, are we switching from one column to the next here, or what are we doing?
Well, sort of. I mean, this is all part of this the different U's, right? The U6 is the broadest form of measurement, and part of the problem, especially now, is that they've got some subdata that started showing up that's in the table from this last month of those people who are unemployed because of the pandemic, so they say. Right, and then they've got another subtext on this: how many of those people got paid, even though they weren't working, by their employer? All right, now that's an interesting piece of data, because that's right out of the PPP money, right?
Right.
And so that data is now showing up in this, and I haven't had time to crunch that yet, but it's in there. I saw it when I was reading through it, as I scanned through it while we were on break. The interesting thing is that on the household data, we had 2.7 million job gains.
Right, that's what I'm looking at.
Okay, it's not the official number, a little over, 1.4. It's 2.7. And then the other thing, though, that is a confounder here, and a pretty serious one, is that non-labor force went up 594.
People
that walked away into supposed job, very strong job gains. I'm a little bothered by that. Those numbers usually go the same direction.
All right, I'm looking at my A1, which you complain about, but it's the way they've changed. These are the cards I'm being dealt, Carl. What can I tell you?
Oh, no, I understand.
They got people in the labor force. Population's up 150,000. They got people in the labor force, they got going up a million. and they got people coming out of the Natin labor force, the column, we don't know what they do, is dropped from 100,500,000 to 99.7. So 800,000 there. So people who basically weren't in the labor force have reentered the labor force, according to this thing. And you've got roughly 3.7 million people got employed. This is a household survey, I believe. And roughly
right, but be careful though. Stay off that seasonally adjusted side. Work off the NSAs on the left.
Right, I'm looking at, okay. Well, you see the one column I have here, they only have the one, and I never can get the other one. They're saying 2.7 million came out of the unemployment rolls and basically went back to work. Is what this?
Well, but that's all seasonal adjustment. See, that's the problem right now is that when you look at where that's coming from, all right, on the seasonal adjustment side, they go from 16,338 to 13,550.
Right.
Okay, but on the NSA side, it's 16,882 to 13,742. And I use the NSA numbers because all I care about typically is the annualized, and of course, you know, Christmas happens on the same day every year, right?
Right.
So if you go annual, if you look at the annual numbers, the way you get the game playing that BLS does out of the game is to use the NSA numbers. It's just that you then have to account for the fact that, you know, there are firing months, okay, and you're not going to be adjusting those out, so you have to be looking at, okay, how does this compare with last year, month of August? That's the only way you can make a valid comparison and have it mean something. And last year in the month of August, by the way, we were -1465 on the unadjusted numbers.
Okay, I got it. The adjusted numbers. I got us with roughly 7.5 million people unemployed than last year August.
Yeah, but the point is, you know, that not adjusted number of 2.732. Okay, last August, the firing from the end of the summer showed up there. And it was -1.465 on an unadjusted basis. So if you want to take a, you know, comparable month by, you know, from last year, for example, then, you know, this is a big deal because 2 years ago it was -1465 and then last year it was -569. So I mean, you know, put another somewhere between a half million and a million and a half into that 2732. Because that would be the normal adjustment that you'd expect to see in August.
Yeah, I've got the adjusted numbers. You got 10,500 less than employed last August.
Yeah, what I see here is that about 10,592 is the 12-month running negative delta that I have at this point in terms of the damage that is still there in the labor force.
All right, walk me through this partially employed with the way, well, guy at the club just reopened like 3-4 weeks ago. I've been going too, Carl, believe it or not. And guess what? They're actually filling the pool up. Now, why are they getting 20 people a day? They're filling the pool up. I'm very happy about that. I wasn't going to criticize, but I'm not sure exactly why they're doing it. But they are. The guy's worked in the locker room forever, Vasquez, terrific guy. He was, obviously, the club was closed from whatever, April 1st, or whatever the hell it was, March 17th to a month ago. I hope he was getting I hope he was getting the good unemployment. But they bring him back a month ago for like 25 hours, or 20 hours, like 4 hours a day.
Right.
So now he's at 20. And then they say, okay, well, we need you another hour, and then it's 24. Well, now they're, you know, getting a few more people, and he's up to 32. And obviously it's still not, you know, the 35 where he qualifies for anything. And the next step would be like 35. Now, where along these numbers is he in the various stages of his comeback?
Well, that's a good question. He is in the, would be considered part-time for economic reasons.
Even now at 32?
Because it's 35 is a break.
Okay.
Okay. So he's there, but barely. All right. So I mean, and you know, and then of course, some of this is predicated on the household survey, and you know, and they're asking questions. They have no way to verify whether or not what you're telling them is truth or not. But he's right on the cusp of being between in that bucket, not in that bucket.
Right. So so where does the on the debtclock.org where they get the 26 mil now? It obviously has changed since the number the unemployed numbers changed. Where do they get that? Does that come? Is that someplace else in the Labor Department report?
I think they're summing. What they're probably doing is summing the unemployed plus the partially employed for economic reasons numbers and trying to come up with something that you know that works there. I mean,
right, they are,
last month the unemployed on a not seasonally adjusted number was 16,882. So, you know, if they haven't updated it yet, that's plausible.
Right, my foolish way of asking the question, if I wanted the number that says how many people are working part-time but really want to be part-time, or they're college graduates, you know, working at a Walmart distribution center or grad school students, is that a BLS number or is that somebody else's number?
I don't think that one's going to be kind of tough to find. I mean, the other thing that I always look at, and you know, I've talked about a bunch of times on the show, is what is the delta that's showing up in the educational stratification? Okay, because the BLS does produce that, and that's a very useful piece of information. And one of the things that's very interesting in this month's data is that if you have a bachelor's degree or better, or if you do not have a high school diploma, you got pretty decent gains last month. Everybody in the middle got nothing.
Okay. Well, so
statistically. So, I mean, you know, there's always exceptions, but statistically, that's how it worked out.
Well, how do they know whether my friend working 20 hours a week is dying to do 35, or whether he says, no, in the 6 months I trained to be a cook and I'm a part-time cook on the weekend, 20's fine. How do they know?
They ask.
Okay.
That's part of the household survey. They ask, and it's, you know, would you prefer to have a full time job if you could?
Okay, that's fair enough.
I mean, that's, you know, and again, it's statistical sampling, but the seasonal adjustments, when you have a dislocation event like this, the seasonal adjustments are always worthless in that they're guesses. But when you have something like this that's happened, you may as well just bin all of that stuff,
right?
Because there's no way to guess what was the impact of the virus. I mean, come on, somebody just pulled a number out of their butt.
Well, from what I'm seeing at this end, again, Chicago is let's just say it's the part that goes over the fence last right now when it comes to this stuff. But we've seen this big rush off. We've seen some people come back. We see every Menards and every Home Depot. If you know anything about plants, Carl, you can't buy a plant. I mean, I guess you could
right.
find me. If you knew anything about, if I could tell a plant from a plant, I could have, not that I want to, I could be working Saturdays anywhere in somebody's plant place. So there's been this demand to get people back to work. I would think that wouldn't be my highest and best use, at least I hope not, with no disparagement to people who know that stuff, because I don't. I'm starting to sense that in the next month or two, this could be our first, or only good one for a while. I mean, the airlines and all the people now that are planning on laying people off, what I'm seeing here is people that have been at home. Some they're saying don't ever come back. That's what Maddie and I have been seeing. So the people who have, I'm going to say, the better jobs are kind of going the wrong way, and the other jobs at the places that are doing well, the Targets and those kind of places, they're all hiring. So we're seeing kind of a qualitative move, in my opinion. And why do I get the feeling that in October, if we're not any better off, these airlines, these other places, and Boeing are just going to bury the people that are actually making money?
Oh, that's going to happen. Yeah, that's absolutely coming. And the other thing that is really dangerous, if you want to see something frightening, take a look at the lumber futures and what has happened there. And then start translating that into the price of sheathing for a roof or, you know, the walls on a house or 2x4s to frame with. And start running those calculations backwards into, okay, what does that do to the price of, you know, any kind of construction? Okay, especially residential construction, because a lot of commercial is, you know, steel framed. But residential is almost all wood framed. And then, you know, contemplate that you've got these, you know, you got the big guys out there, the D.R. Hortons of the world and such, who have had a really nice standpoint from, you know, what their stocks have been doing. But what? But remember that they, you know, this all falls on the subs at some point, right?
Yeah.
Because the wood's got to come from somewhere. What do you do? I mean, we're talking about literally a tripling in the lumber futures price.
Well, I really thought yesterday's sell-off, I mean, I was kind of surprised by it, Carl, because the day I had on my calendar is a potential, shall we say, bump in the road was next Friday, next Thursday and Friday. We've had two CPI numbers in the sixes, and I thought if we got one like, you know, 1.4 next Friday, we're going to cause some people to really wake up. Now, whether we'd ever get that before the election, who the hell knows, whether we'd ever be truthful. But, you know, it's funny, all this stuff we're seeing, and I hate, you know, it's not like I'm running for, whatever, some kind of office, but everything we're talking about, Carl, every single thing is the COVID, the response to it, the jobs, it all, and the way places are closed, it absolutely is burying the people, especially the schools that were supposedly trying to help. The African American.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you know, but the thing is that you look at the political implications of this, and I think part of what you're seeing is the recognition that the broken window fallacy is in full, you know, is in full display here. What burning cities is all of a sudden good for the economy? How in on what planet is that a good thing? Okay? Take a look at, for example, what's happening in some of these areas. You know, you just had this thing with Pelosi getting her hair done or whatever have you. Well, how many people that run hair salons or other service businesses, after seeing that kind of blatant, in-your-face kind of activity people, where does it boil over? Because this is not a new thing. All right? Anyone that thinks that, you know, that Pelosi, this is the first time Pelosi's pulled something like that, or that some other politician's pulled something, you know, I mean, come on, Lightfoot was, you know, getting her hair done when everyone else was on lockdown, right?
Well, I mean, Trump is not adverse to going down to Florida and playing golf when that quarantine himself when he comes back. I mean, they're all the same.
Exactly.
Come on.
This has been going on forever, right? And it's not just related to the Kung Flu either. It's a constant drumbeat of you know, we make rules, you follow them, we ignore them, we don't care.
Right.
You know, go bite me. And so that's been a decades long thing. But at some point, it is so in your eye that the people stand up and say, you know what, go to hell.
Yeah, well, Maddie's got a quick Twitter question, but real quick quote from one of my friends at the Tripoli, and one of Maddie at least knows the guy. It's a lot of construction work, and he said to me once, stay out of the lower-end construction, because just remember always one thing, Chief, a 2x4 that goes in a $50,000 house costs the same as a 2x4 that goes on a $1 million house.
Yeah.
It's pretty. Maddie, what do you got?
Oh, a quick question from one of our listeners. Michael writes in, ask Chief and Carl, do they know why aluminum and nickel have gone up in price?
I'm going to answer this foolishly, not foolishly, and then Carl can give the real answer. Milton Friedman, inflation is always and every time a monetary phenomenon. Carl?
Yes, and as I have pointed out many times over the years, you can't print a chicken.
Yeah.
So, you know, the Fed can sit there and push buttons, and the government can sit there and push buttons, but the problem is real things have to be produced. And so you get the reflection of inflation shows up in asset prices first, and the second place it shows up is in real things that you can't print.
And again, people are not, we only got a couple of minutes or a minute and a half probably, so we'll tee this one up another time. But this comes down to currency theory. If the price of aluminum, you got your hunk of aluminum sitting on my left, you got your dollars on your right, and this year, the Fed has put 20%, so far, this is not an annual rate, is up the amount of dollars in circulation, M2, by 20%. So if the price of aluminum is up 20%, did it really go up, or did the dollar value go down?
Well, it didn't go anywhere.
Yeah, price. Because the price of aluminum,
net of net, there's no change.
Is the price of aluminum versus gold, price of aluminum versus a building, probably is the same, right?
Yeah, and that's but the thing is, people, you know, we are functionally illiterate when it comes to any sort of basic arithmetic. I mean, how many of the kids that come out of high school these days can't make change for 20 without, you know, without the cash register computer?
But why should somebody who lives in the Midwest or any place in this country think of the dollar? You think of the dollar as the constant. The fact that your Fed has decided to not make you that anymore, I don't have a problem with people not picking that up right away. It's not their game, Carl.
Well, I think but remember that deception, you know, the art of illusion is making you look somewhere else while a guy steals the 20 out of your wallet.
Well, that's exactly right, and they're pretty good at that. Carl, thank you, bud. I'll have you back soon, as usual. Next week, we only got 4 days, though. We won't be back till Tuesday. Everybody have a nice Labor Day weekend. Hopefully, the market has come back some. S&P futures are actually up 4. NASDAQ futures only down 105. So we seem to have settled in here after the number. Again, a positive 1.37. Back Tuesday, Stocks and Jacks.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.